for joining us on the show and the Lean on Agile podcast show. And we are very glad and we are very privileged to have you on the show. Thank you for accepting to come and speak to our audience. And to our audience, Ryan is one of the better, if I may say, podcast host. Lean on Agile is very new, but on his last podcast episode called Agile for Humanity, he mentioned that Agile for Human is the largest or the biggest, if I podcast on Agile. So we are talking with one of the biggest podcasts on Agile host with the smallest one. We just started in 2019, so two episodes.
No, you're doing great. So it's great that new podcasts are coming along. It's great that there's going to be more voices and more stories out there. So I'm happy to join in on like passionate podcasters like yourself and help their shows. And you know, Shaheen, it's awesome that you invited me here. I'm excited to talk about the book. I'm excited to talk about your new show. And yeah, so thanks for this. It's exciting.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for coming. So tell us, who is Ryan? So tell us a little bit about
who's
yourself.
Ryan. Yeah, that's a big question, right? So I'm a professional Scrum trainer with Scrum.org. So I teach the Scrum and leadership courses that Scrum.org provides across the all over the globe. Actually, I've been doing thinking or working in some kind of Scrum or Agile way for the better part of the past 20 years. I've been in Scrum Master roles, leadership roles, executive roles. I started as a developer, so I've really sat on many sides of the tables, all within the Fortune 500, and more recently, even working in some startups. So just a wider range wide array of experiences at different sized companies and different verticals, and just really been blessed to have a pretty dynamic and interesting career. You mentioned the Agile for Humans podcast. I think we're the biggest on iTunes, but what does that really mean, right? It's a podcast, and you know, we have a lot of great people on there, and we just try to tell authentic stories that help people do better in their day job, and people seem to like it. We've done pretty well with it, and certainly would love to have you join us on the show sometime. We'll definitely share this information in our podcast, so we'll get some listeners to come over and check out what you're up to. But most recently, I'm now an author, so I've co-written a book called Fixing Your Scrum, Practical Solutions for Common Scrum Problems. I co-authored that with Todd Miller, who's also a fellow professional Scrum trainer. You know, we spent the better part of 2 years putting this book together. And so now I get to add, I should go to LinkedIn pretty quick here and add author to my profile, right?
So it wouldn't be fair enough to not talk about your co-author. So tell us a little bit about him. We weren't fortunate to have him on the show, but
Yeah, Todd's a fellow trainer, as I mentioned. He comes from a very deep product background, you know, started as a developer, went into product ownership and product management. And so together we cover the spectrum of product development and especially Scrum. You know, he's just a great product-minded guy. He's very passionate about getting value out of, you know, everything that a dev team does. He holds the line on quality. He's just all around just a great writing partner. We co-teach quite a bit. You know, he's one of my most favorite people on this planet. And he just, anyone who can put up with me for 2 years as we're writing a book deserves some kind of medal. So yeah, Todd's definitely one of the good ones.
Right. Awesome. And so as you mentioned, we are going to focus on talking about your book today. It's called Fixing Your Scrum, the Most Common Problems That Happens in the Scrum.
Yep.
For you. And there's a fire extinguisher on the page. So tell us more about that fire extinguisher.
So what we learned, it's kind of funny. I actually originally asked for a dumpster fire on the cover of the book and our publisher. So we went through the Pragmatic Bookshelf, and that's, you know, Andy Hunt and Dave Thomas, two of the signers of the Manifesto of Agile Software Development. It's their book publishing company. And, you know, we went back and forth a little bit, and finally the managing editor, he's like, guys, maybe a dumpster fire is a little extreme. Let's go with a fire extinguisher because we want to solve problems, not light things on fire. And we thought it was a smart move and we went with that. But the fire extinguisher is really just representing, let's just get these problems extinguished once and for all. Mm-hmm. And so what Todd and I have done with this book is that we basically broke down the Scrum frameworks by chapters. We talked about the roles, the artifacts, the events. And we put in everything we've seen that's gone wrong and everything that we've tried as consultants and scrum masters and trainers to solve those problems. And so you're not just getting this, you know, there's so many books on the market today that just tell you what Scrum is.
Right.
You know, there's plenty of beginner books out there. There's, right. I probably have, you know, on my bookshelf, 10 of them sitting back there, right?
Right.
What we decided to do was let's pretend that we're going into a company. Let's just tell people exactly how we approach these problems, the things that we try, the insights we try to glean from the people we're working with, and give people this book that they can actually use to do something new tomorrow. You know, something that's right. actionable that can help their teams do just a little bit better immediately.
Right. And I was going through some of the chapters of your book, and I love the way that you guys written the book. You are telling a story, and at the end of it, you're telling, you call it a coach's corner when you're giving practical advice on solving some of the most common problems that comes their way. So I really like that aspect of it. Also, If we go a little bit meta on fixing your Scrum, so a Scrum sure. guide, because you refer to that, is how many pages? 5 or 6 pages?
The Scrum guide, I think as it sits today, is like 17 pages in the PDF. It prints a little smaller, but right. it's not a lot. It's not right. very complicated, right?
Right. And you wrote a book on 240 pages on fixing your Scrum.
Yep.
Right.
It's a really good insight there. That's a good, right. I see a question. I see a question that's going to be tricky for me to answer coming.
Right. So I didn't have any question. I just wanted you to comment on it.
Oh yeah. No. And it's a really good insight, and it's an interesting thing to ask me to comment on. And it's actually, you know, full transparency. I think I've done, you know, 10 podcasts in the last week talking about the book, and no one's actually pointed that out yet. So that's really an interesting mm-hmm. comment.
Right.
The Scrum Guide is 17 pages, and packed in those 17 pages, two geniuses of our time. I think Ken Schwaber and Jeff Sutherland are certainly in that genius category. They put together a framework that they envision organizations using for, you know, complex product developments. And to them, that 17 pages is, I just think they've put together something that should be very clear to implement. And then when it comes up against modern day organizations, there's friction. And so we're taking 240 pages to describe the types of things you're going to run into as you try to apply this simple framework to complex problems, and just all the anti-patterns that could emerge and all of the mistakes that Todd and I have made. There's a lot of failure stories of ours in the book
right.
as we've tried to take this very simple framework and apply it to complex problems. And so I think the page count goes up because there's so many different types of dysfunctions in the organizations today. It's really hard to change just people and organizations. Just change in general is really hard. And when you combine all of that, I think we need more than 17 pages to describe some of the weird things we've seen over the past 20 years.
Right. When I was looking at your book, I think you had the most amount of recommendation, your and Todd's book, on the first couple of pages, that so many people commented on that, on your book, that this is an impactful book. And yeah. I know one of them that was Canadian, Dave Dane.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was amazing to see how many people has recommended that book. It shows the amount of impact that is going to have. So it's not comparable, but I want to see if you know any other Canadian, because we are a Canadian show, any other Canadian that has commented on your book other than Dave.
You know, not directly, right? And so actually, you know what, let me grab a quick copy and look at the front. I got to remember where everyone lives, but I got a copy back here, and let's just Dave Dame is one of my close friends, and I love co-training with Dave, and he's amazing to work with. And he recently did an awesome TED talk that people should see. And he's doing a lot of great speaking engagements and talks around the world. Jill Graves is another Canadian who commented on our book. Jill Graves is a great trainer up in Canada as well. Mm-hmm. She's another professional Scrum trainer. We're real happy that Jill decided to give us a recommendation. It looks like it's Jill and Dave on the inside cover, but Simon Bork is another excellent professional scrum trader up in Canada that we work with and talk to quite a bit. I'm sure there's so many more. They're going to get mad at me for not, you know, there's someone that a friend of mine that, hey, what about me? And, but I think what's interesting, especially about, you know, the scrum.org model is that we have all of these great trainers, you know, all over the country and all over the world, actually, that we're able to tap into. So Todd and I reached out to all of our friends in Canada and in the United States and the Netherlands. And, you know, and we did this, we had them check out the book. You know, Steve Porter, he wrote our foreword to the book. So Steve Porter did the foreword. He did a great job with it. He's up in Canada as well. I mean, we just have such a great group of people that if you go to the scrum.org site and check out the list, there's just some awesome, awesome thinkers up there. Dave Sabina's up there. He's been a good good sounding board every now and then. You know, Dave has been super helpful. I'm just trying to think. I'm running through my, you know, Matthew Grierson is a brand new PST, but he's up working with Dave Dame quite a bit at Scotiabank. And yeah, you guys have like an amazing community up there.
Right.
You know, Daria Bagina just joined us as well. Right. She's excellent. I mean, Luke St. Laurent.
I just met Daria today.
Yeah, Daria is just wonderful. Right. But yeah, just so, there was definitely a lot of Canadian influence, especially with Steve and Dave and Jill and their input that they kept us honest. They made sure that we were relevant in the Canadian crowd as well.
Right. And that's something that I learned about a scrum.org community, not only from you, but from whomever trainer that I talk to. It's one of the major aspects of scrum.org is its community and how grateful they are helping each other.
You know, it's one of the most important things about us is that the community is supportive. We help each other. There's not a lot of competitive nature in it. It's, you know, if a trainer is, you know, if they post something and say, hey, I need some help. I need someone to fulfill a coaching engagement, or, hey, I've got this class I need covered. The community just steps up and they just support and help one another. It's just an amazing organization that you know, Ken Schwaber has put together, that Dave West is really keeping together with great people like Steve and others that just, I mean, they create an environment that's very joyful for trainers like me to work in.
Yeah, nice. So back to your book, I was trying to put it in a sentence or one sentence to describe your book, and I was going meta about it. And I'm like, Todd and Ryan wrote a Scrum guide and a Scrum guide in a problem-solving manner. So if you got into a problem and you want to solve it in implementing or introducing a Scrum, I don't want to use the word Bible, but it's your encyclopedia that the most common problems are going to be there. And to be honest with you, I was just browsing through your book and I'm like, yeah, I've seen that. I've encountered that. So it's amazing that you put that. So I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but for the Scrum Masters that are beginning, this is one of the have two books in their library.
I really hope that's true. And I really hope that what we've written becomes like a companion for every Scrum Master, where if they feel stuck, if they feel lost, if they feel like their problems are too big, if they're struggling to come up with new ideas, I hope this is a book that they turn to, that they mark up, that they highlight, that they underline, that they take notes in, that over, you know, months and years, that if it gives them a new idea or a new way to look at a situation, you know, regardless, we don't really care about the money side of it. I mean, we didn't write this book to get rich. We wrote this book to put these ideas out there, to share how we approach things. And if that really turns into the go-to guide that we, you know, we think it's, I mean, Todd and I, of course, think it's good, but I mean, if other people look at it and think, yes, this really just helps me in my profession and it improves the profession of software delivery and of product delivery, I mean, Todd and I will just be ecstatic.
Right. So, tell us a little bit about, if you have touched on the leadership or organizational leadership in terms of fixing your Scrum.
Yeah, we approached it a little differently than most books. There's a chapter in the book called Management, and we really struggled with this chapter because it's technically management's not mentioned by the Scrum Guide.
Right.
But what we noticed is that there is kind of an anti-management attitude in the Scrum community, at least in certain parts of it. And we wanted to make it clear that management and leadership are essential, that that these are roles that we need. They set the boundaries and constraints that teams use to self-organize within. They're there to really help us with organizational impediments. They're there to be a partner to scrum teams and to really help remove anything that's causing that scrum team not to deliver. Like, that's where we need leadership to really focus. And so we wrote this chapter that basically said, look, scrum masters, you must partner with leadership. Your job is to coach them. Your job is to serve them. Your job is to help them. Like, and we're to respect them because these are super smart people. They've worked hard. They understand their organizations. Just because they're not fully on the agile wagon yet doesn't mean they're not helpful. They're not. And so that chapter is really about respecting leadership and figuring out how to meet their needs. But I think most of all, what we're trying to do is also dispel some myths here, right? Because there's plenty of blog posts out there that, you know, how much does it cost and when will it be done? Common management and leadership questions. You know, people say those are horrible questions. You should never ask them. And I'm like, you know what? Those are perfectly reasonable questions. And scrum teams need to forecast answers for those. Like, we've really spun this on its head a bit.
Right.
So from a leadership perspective, we believe in leadership's role in helping a scrum team. And we also believe that we need leadership to show up with that agile mindset to create environments where scrum teams can thrive. So we've attacked that topic, or we've covered that topic in multiple ways, but it might be a little surprising exactly how we've covered it.
And that's for you guys, for the audience, to get the copy of the book and explore yourself. So let me give you some scenario about the scrum, or at least the scenarios that I have seen happened in the transformation experience that I had. So typically, there's someone that is convinced high up that agile way of doing stuff is the right way of doing it. And typically they go scrum, right? Because it seems that it's the easiest way or the most known way of doing agile. That person in charge of making the decision, how would you influence or how would you help him to fix their scrum? Because it's not going to be fixing, because that person which is in charge of decision making is going to hire some scrum masters or agile coaches. I don't want to debate on which one, right? But the scrum master are coaches as well. So they are hiring scrum masters, and these scrum masters might not have all the
they may not have influence with the leader to make that change, right?
Right. Yeah, not influence or authority.
It's a great question. Right. And if I have the opportunity to work with this leader, I'm not going to throw scrum theory at them. I'm not going to pontificate about agile. What I'm going to do is work with the teams and get data, right? Mm-hmm. I really try to remove a lot of the emotion from these discussions, right? I used to get really worked up, and I turned 40 this year. And
oh, congratulations. Thank
you. Yeah, I survived another year. It was great. But it's also kind of liberating where I'm kind of like, you know what, I'm not fighting much anymore. And so there's a leader who, and first of all, that leader could be right.
Right.
And I need to open myself up to the idea that some of the things that I believe could be wrong. And so getting my mindset correct first before I enter that conversation. Esther Derby has this great, this concept of, and Don Gray, they teach it in Coaching Beyond the Team. It's a great workshop if you can catch it from Esther and Don. It's this center, enter, turn. And so when I get in these situations where I'm tempted to argue, when there's this leader who I believe has some incorrect beliefs, I try to center myself first and figure out, why have I been triggered? Why do I feel so strongly about this? And that gives me the opportunity to decide how I want to enter that conversation. And then I can turn the conversation with intention. And I think Esther and Don's, you know, model there is really, really powerful. But I would show up the way that I would turn, like once I kind of calmed myself down and I entered that conversation in a calm, collected way, I would bring data to the forefront, right? Because that's what's going to move the needle. With the most executives want to look good, right? They want to deliver. They want their teams to be successful because that makes them successful. And so if I can make a compelling argument that brings real data that shows them how we could deliver more effectively, that shows them how they could get more prestige and more influence and how that could lead to their promotion and their success, I need to do that. And I think that's how we start moving the needle in the conversation. But what it means is, and we cover this in the book, in the management chapter, we have to figure out what that leader needs. Mm-hmm. We have to be interested in that, and we have to deliver to that while also moving in that agile direction. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I was listening to one coach that wasn't an agile coach. He was a Canadian football and soccer coach for women. And he was telling the story of how they get to the Olympic bronze medal. And he was telling the story that I, as a coach, half of my time, I'm looking at the data. I was like, oh my God, like if a soccer coach looks at the data for half of the time, we as coaches need to look at the data as well. And that was a turning point in my life, a professional life experience, to look at the data. And now I'm loving all these work that coming from great people like Troy McGinnis and other people that are out there.
Troy McGinnis is great. And if, you know, his spreadsheets are amazing. I actually, I have the privilege of working quite a bit with Daniel Vicanti. Oh, okay. So Daniel Vicanti is also a professional scrum trainer with scrum.org. He created the professional scrum with Kanban for us, along with Yuval Yurit. And Daniel's book, Actionable Agile Metrics, changed my life. Like it really changed the way that I look at data. It changed the way that I look at flow. I think if this data conversation is interesting to any of the listeners, if they're kind of thinking, wow, I want to get started, grab Daniel's book. Like Actionable Agile Metrics is just amazing. And I think every scrum master and manager and leader working in an agile environment should read it after they read my book.
Yeah. And a disclaimer that Actionable Agile Metrics is not a very, for me at least, it wasn't a very easy read. I had to read it twice or...
Yeah, I did too. And actually, so I'm kind of, like I said, I'm in a privileged position. And there are times where I would text Daniel and I'm like, what were you talking about here?
Right.
And he would call me up or send me an email and explain it to me. And, it's just a great position to be in as a scrum.org trainer. We have that supportive community, but you know what? He has so many videos out there. He has so many extra pieces of content outside of the book that I think if you look hard enough and if you, you know, I had to read those paragraphs a few times too, but once it clicks, it changes the way you look at that work on the team board. And I think it's really, really important that scrum masters embrace the idea that data really is critical to figuring out how we improve, how we deliver, and how we convince leadership and management to try a different experiment.
Right. One part of your book that you were talking about POs and the way that there's a proxy PO, or there's a part-time PO, there's a PO that, like, this was an example of anti-patterns, right?
Yep.
For me, I was thinking about, it's not only about, it's not about PO, it's about the model that we are doing decision-making, right?
Yep.
And I was thinking, this book is not only about Scrum. If you change the name of the PO with whomever is in charge of the making decision, you can apply these recommendation that you're talking about, right? What do you think? Has anyone asked you, is it only about fixing your scrum or is it more than that?
You know what? We have not had that comment yet, but as you say that, I'm kind of thinking that, you know, other aspects and other types of orgs could certainly benefit from some of the product and empirical thinking that we put in the book. I think you're making a good point there that, you know, even outside of Scrum, if a waterfall team used half of our recommendations, they would get better, but they would also start iterating towards Scrum.
Right.
And I think what's fascinating, what Todd and I really tried to do, and we had we travel together a lot, we teach together a lot. So there's a lot of like hotel lobby conversations that we've had on this. We wanted to really have the book be about two things at the core. You know, the anti-patterns are great to illustrate the problems and we give ways to solve problems, but those solutions are rooted in empiricism. We want teams to learn how to inspect and adapt transparently and to use transparent artifacts to do those inspections and adaptations. And so that applies to life everywhere. If you make things more transparent, you give opportunities for people to make new decisions over and over, things get better all around. We also wanted to get people rooted in the Scrum values. We really wanted people to understand that the Scrum values are what make the framework really powerful. And I think those values, focus, openness, commitment, courage, and respect, those play everywhere in life, not just on Scrum teams. And I think those two ideas together are powerful, whether you're developing software, whether you're running a restaurant, or whether you're trying to teach four-year-olds how to read, right? I think that these things play out so well in so many different domains.
Yeah, completely agree with you. Yeah. Tell us, who would you recommend this book for? Would you recommend it only, you mentioned it briefly, would you recommend it only for the Scrum Masters or anyone on the team?
I think every person on the planet should buy a copy of the book.
Right.
No, we wrote this with Scrum Masters in mind, but we've been getting some early feedback where some product owners have picked it up and they love it. They finally understand what the teams are saying to them. We've gotten, you know, my background being an executive in leadership and management, I sent it to a lot of management friends and they're like, finally, we kind of get what the Scrum Master's talking about. I think if you're on a Scrum team, this book could be a great sense-making tool. You know, it could really help you figure out where you're at, if there's some weird stuff going on. If you kind of sense you're not getting the full benefit of the framework, whether you're a developer, a Scrum Master, a product owner, a leader, a manager, someone in an organization that's using Scrum, I think this can help you make sense of your situation and help lead you towards some of your own solutions to help make your Scrum better. So I think if you're in an org that's using Scrum, this book could be a great companion for getting you to a healthier way of using this great framework.
And I was going through your book. I couldn't remember any of the teams that I work with that didn't show any of those anti-patterns. Yeah. So have you had any teams that you work that they don't need this book before?
We haven't seen it yet. And so that's kind of, that's funny that you mentioned that. I think it's another good insight that you've brought forward here, because Todd and I talked about that at one point. I don't know if I asked him or he asked me, but I'm like, have you seen a team who just like has never fallen into any of these traps? And I think Todd turned to me and he goes, Ryan, I have fallen into every one of these traps myself. And I was like, and I thought about it. I'm like, geez, man, so have I. I mean, if you read the stories we share in the book, they're all of our failure stories. Like we are completely transparent about the fact that we've struggled, we've messed up, we've used this framework in completely bizarre ways, but each time we've learned from it, we've inspected, we've adapted, we've tried to get better. And over 20 years, we've kind of picked up some tips that we have just shared everything in the book. So everything we know about helping teams get better delivering products, we've crammed it in 240 pages and we really hope that people enjoy our failure stories. They learn from them. They avoid those mistakes and really get to the point where they're fixing their Scrum.
Right. And what is your estimation of the next version of fixing your Scrum?
I don't know. Todd and I actually just signed a book deal, another book deal with the Pragmatic Bookshelf. So the Pragmatic programmers are going to publish us again. We're kind of going in a different direction this time. But I think we're going to continue to see, let me step back. For many, many years, the Scrum community was Scrum but focused. Mm-hmm. So we're doing Scrum, but we have this old practice. We're doing Scrum, but we still do upfront planning. We're doing Scrum, but we do sprint zero. So basically we're doing Scrum, but we have this anti-pattern that we're still holding on to. I think the future is all about Scrum and. So it's more inclusive. It's a welcoming home. The home of Scrum is a big one. It's welcoming. Gunther Verheyen said that in his Pocketbook, which is another excellent Scrum book that people should read. Gunther is just, I mean, he calls himself a Scrum caretaker. I think he's just like the Scrum whisperer. Such a great inspiration to both Todd and I. I think the Scrum and is the future. So it's Scrum and Kanban, not Scrum versus Kanban. It's Scrum and user interface design, not some separate thing. And I think we're going to see a lot more mix-ups and match-ups. And I think that is really exciting for a lot of us.
Right. Like a side note, for example, the dual process delivery, dual track delivery is Scrum and design thinking, if you may.
And we actually, what's funny is I think what's brilliant about the direction Scrum.org is going in right now, they reached out to Josh Seiden and Jeff Gothelf, the authors of Lean UX. And they said, guys, this dual track delivery stuff is interesting, but what does professional Scrum with UX UI look like? And so they developed a class to teach, you know, teach designers how to actually be integrated into a Scrum team and how that actually plays out. And that's what I love. Like we're coming up with these these matchups where it's Scrum and this other discipline, and really showing how empiricism, the values and the framework can help Kanban principles shine, how it can help UX UI flow, and who knows what's next. But I think you're going to see more of this in the future.
I was listening to your last podcast, and you were mentioning that you were a Java developer and you love to solve puzzles. I can relate to that. I'm coming from the same background. So any of these anti-patterns that you guys presented in this book, that if you see next time in working with another team, would be you would be excited about it, because this is the most exciting puzzle that I can get to work with.
I think the only reason I would be excited is that instead of having to suffer through the pain with the team, I can just hand them a book. We can read that chapter over lunch and then go back to work. I think that's the exciting part now. But I mean, there are some issues that pop up that really get Todd and I going. And, but I think nowadays actually we kind of wrote this book partially because we've seen the same things over and over. And we want to get these ideas out there. We want to help people figure out solutions that are best for their context and teams, so that the next time we visit a company, they've upped their game. They've elevated the type of problems that they're having to where it's new, complex stuff. And so they're not paying us outrageous rates to solve the basics. They're calling us in to collaboratively help them deliver even bigger and better products.
Right. But any of these anti-patterns that you would get excited to see?
I get really fired up when I see teams not creating sprint goals during sprint planning. I think that is such a huge mistake, and it's one that I really try to correct in teams quickly. Mm-hmm. The sprint goal is so misunderstood. It's misused. It's abused. A sprint goal is there to help a team focus on why they're doing the work. And during the creation of the book, Todd and I came to the realization that a sprint goal actually connects a team to their customer. Right. That sprint goal that we set is really an outcome we're trying to achieve that enables a customer to do something. Right. It should be inspirational. It should be something that we focus on. It should be something that we protect. And so when distractions come up, when the team has questions, when they're not sure what to do, they can point back at that goal and make a decision. Like, are we about to put that goal in jeopardy? And if the answer is yes, we cannot do this thing.
Right.
I think when we skip that, we turn teams into backlog lumberjacks or feature factories. You know, backlog lumberjacks is Kalpesh Shah's comment, or his phrase. And I think it's so correct. It's, if we don't have a goal, if we haven't connected teams to the why, if they don't know their purpose or how they're impacting the world, they just chop through feature to feature to feature to feature. Apathy sets in. It becomes okay to cut corners. You know, it just doesn't matter. If you want to demotivate a development team, disconnect them from the why of their work, and you'll get apathy pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. That sprint goal, though, it connects them to the why. It gives us focus. It's what we commit to as a dev team. We don't commit to scope and scrum. We commit to the sprint goal, and that goal guides us all throughout a sprint. I think it's so wildly important, and when I see it skipped, that's one that I jump on pretty quickly. Right. The other one that Todd and I talk about quite a bit, just like because we geek out on this stuff and we talk pretty often, is the daily scrum. Mm-hmm. When that daily scrum turns into a status meeting, we just get really upset. And not upset at people, just kind of upset with ourselves that how have we coached the team in such a way that they're doing this, and we've got to solve this quickly. The daily scrum is such a wonderful opportunity for a dev team to practice self-organization. It is not a status meeting. It is a serious event where teams plan their collaboration for the next 24 hours on how they're going to work together as a team to make progress towards their sprint goal and to inspect and adapt their sprint backlog. It just pains us to see this turn into a stat. You know, what are you going to do today? What are you going to do today? That status is just worthless. Go ahead.
Yeah, and as you said, it's for the dev team. And if you look at the Scrum Guide, it's for the Scrum Master to coach them to know that this is what they need to do and then step back. But you know what? I found it fascinating that not many people know about that, because they look at all of these things as Scrum events. And by default, they think that the Scrum Master is facilitating those.
you know, if they read the book, they'll get a great education on what that event is actually for. So I'm glad we share that similar kind of eye for a good daily scrum, because I think the sprint goal and the daily scrum are kind of my two that really get me fired up. I also think when I see blatant disrespect for management and leadership, that's probably the other one that just I try to step in and really coach and mentor and teach and train and try to get that resolved quickly.
Right. I have gone through all of the comments that I had. There's one that caught my eye as well, that I think most of the people are going to have this challenge if they're moving from, let's say, a sequential or like an old-fashioned way of developing software to a Scrum, would be too many meetings, right?
Sure.
Do you want to talk about that a little bit in that situation? What's useful for them?
Yeah, so too many meetings. That usually happens when an organization adopts Scrum and they just put the framework and the events just on top of their calendar.
Yeah.
And they forget the fact, and Ken has talked about this extensively. I go back to all of the books that Ken Schwaber previously published. I try to watch all the videos. There's such a wealth of information from watching Ken speak. And something I gleaned from him from one of his keynotes from a few years back is that every Scrum event was designed to replace every meeting on your calendar. And so if you just adopt the Scrum framework, and if you just put those events on top of your calendar and forget to cancel the meetings that existed, you're in trouble. There's no time to work. Yeah, and so as a Scrum Master, what I like to do, and I know we laid this activity out in the book, what I really like to do is take, if the dev team wants to do this, grab a conference room, put calendars up on the wall and say, oh, this status meeting, invite that executive to the sprint review. Oh, this lessons learned meeting, let's do a retro. And just start dragging all of these meetings to the correct Scrum event, inviting the people that we need to the review or to planning, whatever it is that we're replacing, and get those calendars cleared, because people need time to work. If we don't clear the calendars, when is the work supposed to get done?
Right.
Hopefully that helps.
Yeah. One thing I want to share with you guys, the listener of this podcast, would be that you don't need necessarily to commit to reading the 242 pages of this book. So it's very easily, if you have some challenges at work, you can just browse each chapter, find what the challenge is similar to your challenge, or you might have this meeting overrun, and you just go to that one, and at the end of each chapter, there is a coach's corner. You can look at the suggestions and ideas there, and you can implement those. So you not necessarily need to commit to reading the 242 pages. So you can look at it as kind of an encyclopedia or book of reference for you to fix your problem. So that's another Canadian that's giving a thumbs up on this book.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. We really tried to design it in a way that it's user friendly, that people could flip to a chapter with an event that they're struggling with pragmatic suggestions. And I'm glad to hear that seems to have worked. And we just want this book to be useful for people. It's not a book that should just sit on your shelf. I hope people take it with them. They mark it up. They earmark pages. They mark things that they want to refer back to. And I hope it just turns into that companion that helps people do great work and do more joyful work and just bring a lot of success to teams.
Right. And last but not least, where do people can get the book?
So the book is on sale it's on Amazon. So it's available on Amazon.com. It's available through the Pragmatic Bookshelf. So PragProg. I'm trying to remember if it's pragprog.org. Let me take a look. I'm pretty sure it's pragprog. It's pragprog.com. So you can get pragprog.com, amazon.com. Both of those places are great spots to look. Hopefully we'll get some links in the show notes for all of that.
Yeah.
And but yeah, should be available and it's shipping now.
Okay. So you guys can get that there. I'm going to check amazon.ca to see if we can get that on Canadian site as well. I'm going to put the links on the show notes. With that being said, anything else that you want to share with us, Ryan?
You know what? I think we're good. The book is really my focus right now. And I just want to say thank you. I appreciate you having me on your show and sharing the book with your audience. And I hope we said a few things that were useful to them. And you know what? I can't wait to hear how you and the listeners, you know, are using the book. And so if people want to use the Fixing Your Scrum hashtag, hit us up on Twitter, let us know, show us a, you know, send us a picture of you with the book, show us the latest notes you've made about it. And we would really just love to get that feedback.
Thank you for being on the show, Ryan. For the last questions, what's your impression when you heard Lean on Agile?
When I heard Lean on Agile, I think it's a wonderful show. I think it's a wonderful thing. And I think you are growing the next big podcast, and I can't wait to see what you do.
Okay. Thank you for saying that. Pleasure to having you on the show. Thank you, Ryan.
Thank you.